Despite all the attention given to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., President Trump's choice for Health and Human Services Secretary, many public health experts based in rural communities are focusing more on the loss of healthcare infrastructure in the U.S. Ann Sosin is a public health researcher and practitioner based at Dartmouth College. KGVM contributor David Rosenberg spoke with her about the country's rural healthcare infrastructure before RFK Jr.'s confirmation.
You are concerned about the infrastructure in rural healthcare, and I'm wondering if that was a problem before the new administration, and if you think that it's going to get substantially worse now.
I have long been concerned with the shrinking healthcare infrastructure in rural communities. This was a problem prior to the arrival of the Trump administration. It was a problem prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. Over the last several decades, we've seen rural communities lose their hospitals, their primary care facilities, their pharmacies, and other healthcare infrastructure. And what this means for rural Americans is they have increasingly diminished access to healthcare and the resources that they need to stay healthy as well as to meet their needs when they fall ill.
What can be done about it on the state level, if anything?
So, you know, there are actions that we can take at a federal level, at a state level, and then also at a local level. These actions often are located at policy level. There are policy choices that can be made around reimbursement, particularly for Medicaid. Many rural hospitals are serving populations that are insured or more insured by Medicaid. And so those policy choices that are made by state lawmakers have enormous bearing on the viability of rural hospitals. So that's, you know, that's one place for us to look when we're thinking about states. But I'd also add that it's really important, particularly in this moment in time, that we all, you know, work to preserve the rural health infrastructure, that we recognize how important these facilities are, not only for the health, but also for the economic survival of our rural communities. Often rural facilities are seen as expendable, and many think that rural people can just get care at larger facilities that may be located far away. And so those ideas often lead us to think that it really actually doesn't matter, that it doesn't have consequences if we do start to close facilities.
And in these confirmation hearings for RFK Jr., has the issue of rural healthcare come up at all?
So I want to say that I haven't been able to follow the confirmation hearings closely, so I'm reluctant to comment on the hearings, but access to healthcare for rural communities has not been a point of focus in the discussion around these nominees, is to my knowledge.
Is there a better approach to this in other countries, as far as you could see?
You know, certainly there are many countries that do a far better job of ensuring access to healthcare for all of their citizens than the U.S., and also that achieve better health outcomes. Even though the U.S. spends much more per capita on healthcare, it underperforms its peer countries. And so, you know, I think there's much that we can learn from the rest of the world, both in terms of how to organize our healthcare system, as well as how to deliver care to rural populations. But that's not necessarily my area of expertise. And so, you know, I guess I'll leave it at that.
So during the pandemic, there were many online appointments, and I think some people do that anyway. Is that something that rural people can do? Or even if they can, is that really inadequate?
Yeah, I think you're talking about telehealth. And we've looked at this in our own research and have seen the use of telehealth in our rural northern New England setting. And what we saw in our early pandemic research is that telehealth is a promising tool for advancing rural health equity if it's embedded within a robust existing system of care. We saw that many people were able to access specialty care using telehealth, that the option of having telehealth increased utilization of behavioral health services. In particular, it can eliminate driving time for rural residents. That said, we need to make sure that the infrastructure is in place for rural people to be able to use telehealth. Many areas have very poor broadband coverage. Rural residents may have more limited access to devices. And so addressing some of those barriers to utilizing telehealth is really important. I also want to add that when most of us think about telehealth, we're thinking about patients connecting directly with providers. In our rural region, we also see the use of telehealth to support the delivery of emergency care, and that's provider to provider telehealth to support remote ICU care for critically ill patients. And so there are a wide variety of applications for telehealth in the rural environment.
Are there areas in the U.S. where the rural health care is at a higher level, would you say, that other areas can learn from?
Certainly. So I would say a couple of things. First, rural is not a monolith. There's significant diversity both across and within rural places, including within our rural northern New England region. The second thing I would say is that there are some common processes that have played out across rural America and in that have affected rural places in common ways. That said, there are common challenges in terms of delivering healthcare in rural places. And there are also places that have much more in the way of health infrastructure. Here in rural northern New England, we have, I would say, more infrastructure relative to some other parts of the country. We have similar challenges in terms of the delivery of care and population health, but there is a more abundance of infrastructure in this particular region.
And with the new administration and now in power, what challenges do you see in the area of rural healthcare?
I have not really seen a plan for rural health or rural healthcare from the new administration. Certainly, there are many reasons for concern, given the track record of the former administration and some of the appointees that we're seeing come forward. But I've yet to see anything that addresses the enormous needs of rural Americans in terms of their health, or any other aspect of their lives, to be honest.
So it could be an issue that's kind of ignored or forgotten, do you think?
That is likely.
Any cause for hope or optimism in the future? I mean, maybe there's some good efforts, non-governmental efforts. There's community organizations that get together to provide health care, things like that.
So I see a lot of reasons for hope in rural places. I see the extraordinary work that's being done by rural healthcare providers, by rural organizations, by community groups. There are a lot of assets that we can build on in our rural spaces. We often hear accounts of rural America that center on things that they lack or on deficits. We hear very little about the creative and innovative work that is happening in many spaces. So that's, that's a starting point. That said, there are, enormous challenges, facing the U.S. right now. Some of the things that we're seeing play out on the national stage are disproportionately going to impact rural people in rural places. And so we build on the strengths, but we also have to, be attentive to the way that rural communities really stand to be harmed disproportionately by some of what we're witnessing right now.
Some of these communities are strong Republican areas, right? And would they then turn against the administration if their needs aren't being met? Or is that's too much of a speculative question?
So certainly the urban-rural political divide has been well documented, and that has developed over time. There's a long history behind the divide that we see between urban and rural America. And I think it's naive to think that that divide will disappear overnight and without sustained and careful action. While it's very likely that rural places will be harmed by some of the policies that are being proposed, I think we should not assume that the immediate response will be to turn against the administration or to embrace the Democratic Party. In my personal experience, I think many rural people feel invisible. They feel like their concerns are not heard or not represented by political elites in either party. There are sharp urban and rural divides. There are also class dynamics at play. And we need to listen deeply to understand kind of the source of those divides and those feelings and really think about what we can offer rural places in terms of a vision for the future, for their health, for their economic well-being, if we really want to change the current dynamics that we see.
Is there a category that you might call semi-rural, where it's kind of somewhere between suburban and rural?
So there are many definitions of rural. They're the two most common are the census and the Office of Management and Budget definition, and they measure rural places in different ways. And so different things get counted as rural under those different definitions, and that has implications for how we think of rural and we understand kind of different indicators of well-being in rural places. And so, and there are in some places, semi-urban or suburban areas get counted as rural, but and under other definitions, they do not. I'll also just say that, you know, rural again falls along a spectrum from, you know, the most remote places to larger towns that are located in more rural places. So there's not one singular definition of rural.
Yeah, I'm thinking of places, for example, in Alaska, where you could only get to by helicopter,
yeah,
as opposed to places where you could drive to the next nearest city, although it might take you a while. Let's say you're a rural person, I don't know, in the middle of the country, and you need to go to a hospital. Are you saying the hospital might be, I don't know, 2 hours away and it might be too late to get emergency care? Is that one of the problems?
That's certainly the reality in some parts of rural America. Care may be a helicopter ride away, you know, not a short car ride away, but that's not the case everywhere. Remote rural Alaska is very different from a rural Vermont community that's not that far away from a major or one of the region's academic medical centers.
Speaking of Vermont, has Bernie Sanders brought the issue up or any other representative from there?
Bernie Sanders has devoted a lot of attention to strengthening the infrastructure of federally qualified health centers or FQHCs and is obviously, as someone from Vermont, very interested in rural healthcare.
Anything else you want to add to what you've said?
So I guess just, you know, given the moment that we're in, you know, maybe I could speak to kind of the feelings of rural people around this particular moment and what we're seeing happening right now. You know, there's been a lot of attention on the rise of RFK and, you know, other extreme figures at this particular moment. And many people see rural places as having often particularly fertile terrain for RFK and his ideas. And I want us to critically interrogate some of those ideas and to really understand or at least explore the social, cultural, and economic conditions that have created a receptive audience for RFK and others in rural places, and also to think about kind of the political economy that has fueled the rise of some of these figures. We've seen enormous resources invested in undermining public health and public health tools and in pushing out disinformation and misinformation to rural and other places. And so we have to make sense of, you know, a very complex moment. And it's very easy to resort to kind of easy explanations of what we're seeing in the political sphere right now. And so I'd really invite listeners to embrace kind of the complexity to spend time with some of the work that's been done by scholars in rural places to understand what we're seeing right now, and to really spend some time listening to what rural people have to say about their lives and their hopes for the future
That's public health researcher Ann Sosin speaking with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on February 20th, 2025.